Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
This evening reminds us of both the timeless teachings of a great religion and the enduring strengths of a great nation. Like so many faiths, Islam has always been part of our American family.
Wait, stop. George Washington was a Muslim? How much more can we take of this? I can't take it anymore. I mean, I could see the president catering to the Muslims because there's a large voting block of Muslims in America. I understand that. But must he lie? Do Muslims require that he lie about their contributions to America? Saying a thing like this, Islam has always been part of our American family? I've never heard anything like this. You know, it's only a matter of time until everything Obama has passed will be rendered what it is, which is un-American and unconstitutional. There was another nail in the coffin of Obamacare today, just hours ago. Obamacare has been struck down by the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. That's a huge blow to the imposter. That's right. The court ruled that to force Americans to buy health care, what Obama and his cohorts called the individual mandate, which means forcing you to buy a health care plan controlled by Nancy Pelosi, was unprecedented, unwelcome, and unconstitutional. The judges in the federal court said the individual mandate exceeded congressional authority under Article 1 of the Constitution, something Obama should have known about since he's such a great legal scholar. But Obama and Pelosi had claimed that the individual mandate was essentially a tax and therefore legal. The federal court just ruled that it was not within Congress's power under the Commerce Clause of the Constitution because the mandate constitutes a penalty, not a tax. Here's what the court said. Well, I don't have to read it to you. All they said was is what Obama and Pelosi did was an illegal expansion of federal power. And while the illegitimate left will continue its legal challenges, this ruling today makes it much more likely that the U.S. Supreme Court will ultimately strike down not only this element of Obamacare, but perhaps the entire law itself. Now, I want to tell you something. I told you so in Trickle Up Poverty from pages 148 on. I spent an entire chapter on Obamacare, and I have to say something. I resent that Michelle Bachmann is running around saying, I told you so. If she did tell the American people that this was unconstitutional, it was only because this tax lawyer read Trickle Up Poverty or heard it from me, Michael Savage, and I'm getting sick and tired of another individual wrapping herself in the conservative flag, ripping me off, and saying that she's the Holy Grail. I'm sick of it. I'm just sick of it. You go to Trickle Up Poverty, my best-selling book from 2010, and you'll see it all in there, the health care fraud, what's really in the bill, and pick it up on page 148, the Schechter brothers. Now, I'm not going to read it to you right now, but the fact of the matter is, I was the one who delineated the fact that what Obama had done in Obamacare was clearly unconstitutional. It was I, Michael Savage, who told you so. And I said that the operative word there is redistribution. That's pure Marxist socialism. And I wrote, does the fact that FDR was Obama light surprise you? And I said, you see, in the 1930s, centralized government control was appearing around the world. Russia had Stalin. Italy had Mussolini. America had Roosevelt. But Michael, you may say, FDR wasn't a fascist. He was a good guy. I'm not suggesting Roosevelt was an outright fascist. What I'm saying is he was dabbling in the popular thought of the day, namely that the government knows better than private business and the private sector about what's best for the people. Now, I know you think you've heard all of this before, but you haven't heard it all before. The 2-1 ruling today The 2-1 ruling today breaks the back of Obamacare. It breaks the back of Obama's health care law. Now, I can ask you a question. Which part of America's which part of Obama's far left plans for America that he has forced down our throats do you think will next be knocked down by a federal court? Do you know of anything else that he might be overturned on? Because this man does not know his limits. No one's ever controlled him. Nobody ever curtailed any of his actions. Obama's very much like the spoiled brats in the streets of England who got away with everything they've ever done all of their lives, and no one ever said no. And now he's stolen our very freedoms for the first couple of years. He's had a free run on his tricycle, and he's being reined in. But for him to get up today on an iftar dinner celebration, a Ramadan thing in the state dining room, okay, I understand it. There are millions of Muslims in America, and the Democrats want them to vote for them. But do Muslims require that a president lie to them the way Obama does in clip 3? Play it again.
Now, this evening reminds us of both the timeless teachings of a great religion and the enduring strengths of a great nation. Like so many faiths, Islam has always been part of our American family.
Washington was a Muslim.
Contributed to the strength and character of our country.
Long contributed?
This has been especially true over the past 10 years.
You mean since 9/11?
1 month, we will mark the 10th anniversary of those awful attacks that brought so much pain.
So we're to celebrate what Muslims did to us?
Time to honor all those that we've lost, the families who carry on their legacy, the heroes who rushed to help that day, and all who've served to keep us safe during a difficult decade. And tonight it's worth remembering that these Americans were of many faiths and backgrounds, including proud and patriotic Muslim Americans.
You know, I've had enough of this. I can't take it. I truly can't. Muslims attack. Now you're trying to rewrite history and say it was Muslims who saved us on 9/11. It's not bad enough that you're getting on all fours. I mean, it's sickening. You say, well, he's a politician. What do you expect? Then we got Jay Blarney. As you know, I'm a fan of the Irish, but I'm not a fan of the Blarney. In fact, I'm a fan of the Irish spirit, Irish poetry, Irish literature, but not of Irish Blarney. I see too much of it coming out of the Leprechaun and out of Wallbanger, two of the two faithful boys of the Emerald Isle. But the Blarney they throw is nothing compared to the Blarney thrown around by Jay Carney. That's the White House spokesmouth who defends the indefensible, which is Obama's vacation to Martha's Vineyard. Listen to clip 8. This is now takes Blarney to a new level.
He said the president will not rest until the joblessness and the economy are worked out. But the president is obviously going on a vacation, and I'm wondering, is there any concern about the impression that the president going to Martha's Vineyard for 9 or 10 days might leave with the American people?
Let me go to acknowledge that, yes, the president does plan to travel with his family at the end of August to Martha's Vineyard, as he has in the past. And I don't think Americans out there would begrudge that notion that the president would spend some time with his family. It is also, I think, as anyone who's covered it in the past, either in this administration or others, there's no such thing as a presidential vacation.
Really, then why not take it in the White House if there's no such thing as a presidential vacation? All right, so there's no such thing. They work 24/7, so do I. Any schmuck with a BlackBerry could say he's not on vacation. Okay, what do you mean no such thing? Then what's he going to Martha's Vineyard for if there's no such thing? He's got a White House. He's got Camp David. Not good enough for him? Well, we know why he's going to Martha's Vineyard. Just look at the tail numbers at the airport. That's all. N4030902. N9020102. See how many of them come out of Beverly Hills. You'll see how the tail numbers, you know. No matter what the tail numbers say on the private jets at Martha's Vineyard, they all spell Katzenberg, Spielberg, and Soros. That's all you got to know. Whatever the tail numbers are, you can jumble them back to Spielberg, Katzenberg, and Soros. You know, I didn't know Soros had it in him. I saw pictures today in the New York Post of the old leftist phenomenon with a couple of young broads. I guess you can't say broads anymore. A couple of young women, young ladies, as they like. I don't know what you call them today. Who cares? A couple of young, I have another word for it. Gold diggers, does that work for you? He promised one of them an apartment, allegedly. Then she claims he choked her. I didn't know the 85-year-old had it in him. I know there's another guy I know in the same bracket. I mean, financially, not quite to that level, but he's rich. Another one runs around with the 30-year-olds. Very, very good family values. The leftists have great family values. Someone's calling from New York saying, where's the vacation for our troops? Yeah, they have a vacation. How about a vacation for the 30 SEALs that Obama just killed by having them all on one flying bus? The slow-turning greyhound of the sky. We still don't know who put them on that, do we? I'm supposed to forget it because Jay Blarney told us to forget it. I'm supposed to forget what we knew this week. I'm the only one who pointed it out in the media. You'd expect someone else would have noticed this, that a president committed such a dastardly act as to put all of our Navy SEALs on one slow-turning helicopter and fly them into a hot LZ. I mean, when they attacked Osama bin Laden, they used three or four helicopters, absolutely stealthy helicopters, some we had never seen before, for that mission. Why did they put him on an old flying Greyhound bus, which went down in flames because it was hit by a very old primitive weapon, a rocket-propelled grenade? Why? Who made that decision? Was it the general on the ground? Was it the defense secretary himself? Was it the commander-in-chief who, obviously, he never sleeps? And he's never on vacation. He worked 24/7 in between entertaining basketball teams and rap artists at the White House. I mean, I'm sure he has his BlackBerry when he's dancing barefoot in the park. We understood he enjoyed himself on the White House lawn a few weekends ago. I'm sure he had his BlackBerry in his hip pocket while he was dancing to the hip-hop. So you want me to go on with my sarcasm and satire, or you want to talk about the health care slap in the face to Pelosi? 2-1, federal court. It says that the centerpiece of the health care law is unconstitutional. They broke it over their knee. And, of course, you got to understand something here. It will go to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court will rule exactly the same as they did. As I reported in Trickle Up Poverty, I'm not selling you a book, I'm selling you ideas. This was tested on two Jewish butchers back in the 40s when FDR's fascists, the liberal fascists of the time, tried to impose Marxist socialism on them. Put them in jail, by the way. Put them in jail. Said you can't charge X for a kosher chicken. They said, no, we'll do it the way we want it. The Schechter Poultry Company in New York City have the case on pages 148 and onward in Trickle Up Poverty. Anyway, the Schechter Poultry Corp, they went to jail. They went to prison, and they came out and sued FDR. They appealed their case, which ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court. And against all odds, these two little Jewish butchers, Schechter Poultry Corp versus United States, guess who won? Chicken Little. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Mistake, Muslim Americans help to keep us safe. We see this in the brave service.
Mr. Obama, please. Muslim Americans help to keep us safe. You mean like Major Nidal Hassan, who committed the atrocity at Fort Hood? Or do you mean the Muslim who was arrested 2 weeks ago? Or was it the Muslim who arrested a month before that? Or was it the Muslims arrested a few months before that? How much propaganda can a nation take till it pukes? I can't take this anymore. I could understand him celebrating Ramadan. Bush did the same thing. Muslims are a part of the American tapestry. There are millions of them. They vote. But why must you bend the truth when you go to Muslims? It's crazy. This is getting crazier. Listen to him again now.
Make no mistake, Muslim Americans help to keep us safe. We see this in the brave service of our men and women in uniform, including thousands of Muslim Americans. In a time of war, they volunteered.
All right. You mean like Major Nidal Hassan, who has still not been tried for political reasons. Lieutenant Pahena is rotting in a fort. A war hero, a young war hero, is rotting in an American prison because he protected himself against a Muslim in Iraq. He's rotting in jail while Major Nidal Hassan is getting four ethnic meals a day and major league legal and medical care. Is that the kind of Muslim American you're talking about, Nidal Hassan? I can't take it. You understand something? Let me explain something to you, my audience. I'd rather not be talking like this. I'd rather have a smooth jazz show. I got the voice for it. I got the head for it. I can do an FM mic show. I can just smooth it out and take it easy. But if I'm going to get up here and I'm supposed to be a broadcaster who tells you something about the world through his eyes, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Do you want me to put on not rose-colored glasses, but dark glasses and get a cane altogether? Because the only way you can talk nicely about this administration is by being deaf, dumb, and blind. It's sickening. It is just sickening. But I'll mellow it out. You know, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to take a break. Then we got Herman Cain on for a while. And I really like the man's politics, but I'm actually going to ask him his pizza recipes. Because I want to know how he makes the pepperoni with the extra cheese. At least he's produced something. Let's see. Polenti produced nothing but government. Romney produced nothing but Romney Care. Who else is running? Who else do we have out there? Bachman produced nothing but tax dodges. At least Herman Cain produced a product, right? He ran Godfather Pizza. So who on the Republican ticket has produced a service or a product that anyone ever wanted? Is there anyone, basically, Beowulf? Really, what's the list? Who's on the list? Who else is still fighting? I didn't listen to that last night. First of all, I was flying yesterday. I flew all day. I'm a little jet lagged. I flew to the East Coast. We had a beautiful thunderstorm just now. Loved it. I got away from that horrendous weather in San Francisco. normally I say I like cold weather. I couldn't take it. 5 weeks of wind and fog. I felt like I was in a bad Buñuel movie. It was actually like a bad Bergman movie after a while. It just wouldn't change. I told you I like cold, but every day, like gale force winds in the Bay Area, it's enough already. Everybody say, oh, it's wonderful. The country's sweltering. I hated it after 6 weeks. So I jumped on a plane, and now I'm sweltering from the humidity. But it's a nice change, and, you know, it's a nice change. You got to be an amphibian to live here. I don't know. People live here all year round. They like it. They get adjusted. I don't know what they do. It's very beautiful in a way if you're amphibious. If you're reptilian, you could live in this state. It's unbelievable. The palmettos. Fruit is dropping everywhere. Bugs.
Savage.
Well, another nail in the coffin of Obamacare today. The individual mandate was found to be what it is, which is un-American and unconstitutional by a federal 11th Circuit, as I wrote in Trickle Up Poverty. Joining us right now is a man who knows what Obamacare will do to business, because he is a very successful businessman and a candidate for the presidency, and someone I really support, because of all the candidates on the Republican side, Herman Cain is the only one that I know of who produced a product or a service that is of any value whatsoever. And so without further introduction, we introduce to the Savage Nation candidate Herman Cain. And it's a real honor, sir. Thanks for being with us.
Mr. Savage, Michael, this is Herman Cain. Thank you. And let me just say, based on your introduction, I fought Hillary-care back in the early 1990s, and Obamacare is worse. So this judgment, this ruling by the 11th Circuit Court, is absolutely news to my ears and the news to every business person in America. Because like you said, this is a job killer. But, you know, the liberals, they don't care about jobs. They only care about their agenda. So thank you for having me on, Michael.
Well, okay, let's start with the top of the discussion. You know, you have the Republican candidates vying to come out in the front of the field. And I'm not trying to trounce the others, but amongst all of the candidates, Mr. Cain, you seem to be the only one who stands out in terms of actual business experience. I do know that Mr. Romney ran an investment firm. That is true. But in terms of product, I'll take a pizza over a fiduciary instrument any day.
You know, you're right. And the difference is I actually made a pizza in the restaurant before I ran the company. I actually made a Whopper before I ran 450 Burger King restaurants.
Are you saying you actually were a pizza maker?
Yes, because my philosophy whenever I took over a new business was to learn how that business works from the most fundamental basic level. I actually went into the restaurant and went through some training for a couple of days, such that if I'm making these decisions out of my executive office, I know what I was talking about. I did the same thing at Burger King. I went in, or I ran a Burger King restaurant before they made me a vice president, even though I had already been a vice president at Pillsbury before.
Interesting.
My philosophy is just real simple. If you want to know how to solve a problem, or you want to better understand the business, get down there and get your hands dirty and do it for a while so you can better understand it. And this is the difference between my business experience and Mitt Romney's, in all candor, because I've not only run small businesses, medium-sized businesses, saved businesses, started businesses, I've actually made the sandwiches and made the pizzas. And that's the difference between the kind of business experience that I have.
Well, look, fiscally, you're a real conservative, and Mr. Romney, and I think he's a wonderful man. I had dinner with him a year and a half ago. He won't acknowledge it today. This is typical of so many politicians. I'm pretty sure if you and I sat down over a pepperoni, you wouldn't hide it the next day. And I hope we can do that one of these days. No, in San Francisco, but he won't acknowledge he had dinner with me. And the interesting thing is, he's a very nice man. He's personable. He has a wonderful background. He has four wonderful family, honestly. However, he's not a true Republican in the sense of a conservative. He's a liberal Republican on the order of a Rockefeller or even a Bush one, truthfully. And that's not what America needs now, in my estimation.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, with all due respect, you know, look, I don't have any name against Mitt Romney, but the difference is, the first difference is what I just described. My business experience has been more hands-on throughout my 40-year career, no matter which job I held. Secondly, I came from very humble beginnings, and I don't have any heart feelings against people who came into a good situation when they
right.
were born.
No, neither
but
do I.
Mother,
I'm nothing against the yeah. people who inherit
no,
money.
To,
God bless them. You know what I'm saying? I hope I leave my children and children's children something.
But see, the thing is, I had a very humble beginning, so I can better relate to the people that are struggling, because my mom was a domestic worker, my dad was a chauffeur and a barber, and he held jobs that he needed to do in order to get by. So I can identify better with the people who are almost unemployed. I can better identify with the people that are unemployed. I've got relatives that can't find a job because of this sorry, lousy economy. So I can identify more with that. And so,
Mr. Kane, let me. I'm curious now. You've got my curiosity. And first, let's stick to the presidential thing, because I'm trying to think of my audience and of my own interests at the same time. How did you actually begin in the corporate world? How did you climb the ladder?
When I graduated from college in 1967, I was one of the first ones in my family to ever graduate from college. Went to work for the Department of the Navy as a mathematician. I was a mathematics and physics major.
Whoa. Well, now, why don't we know that? Why doesn't America know that Herman Cain was a mathematician?
And guess what I worked on when I first got out of college? Fire control ballistics. For fire control systems on our naval ships and on our naval aircraft. I was a fire control systems ballistics analyst when I first got out of college because of my mathematics and physics background.
That's
and
amazing.
After that,
no, but you see, I didn't know that. Here I have you on my show, so everyone knows the number one African-American businessman, but they don't talk about your educational experience or your background. Why? Because it doesn't fit the stereotype, I guess, huh?
No, it doesn't fit the stereotype. They don't want to talk about my background and know that I can count, know that I have an analytic mind, although I can communicate with people. And then after being a ballistics analyst for fire control systems for 6 years with the Department of the Navy, I wasn't in the Navy. I was a civil servant for 6 years. Then
right.
I went into the corporate world, worked at Coca-Cola, then Pillsbury, and I was able to climb the corporate ladder at Pillsbury to become a vice president. Then I went over to Burger King with a career change to get into
right.
the restaurant business, and I had to climb that corporate ladder. And eventually, because of all of that success, Pillsbury appointed me president and CEO of Papa's Pizza. Because of that job, I then later was asked to become head of the National Restaurant Association, which today is the second largest employer in the country next to government.
That's amazing. Well, no, I understand who they are. They lobby for businesses, rightly so. I have friends in the restaurant business in San Francisco who have warned me for years. Do you know what they've done in taxing restaurants in San Francisco? They've added do you know that they've added a medical tax to the sales tax in San Francisco, 1% on top of everything to pay for health care in that city?
They don't know anything else to do, Michael, except tax, tax and tax and spend, spend, and spend. This is what's wrong. You are absolutely right. And the same mentality has gone to Washington, D.C., which is one of the reasons that I decided to run for president. I never wanted to run for president. This wasn't a lifelong dream.
Right.
I have done this because this country has been good to me. And from my humble beginnings, I have been able to achieve my American dreams and then some. But I feel a responsibility because I've got three grandkids, and I'm thinking about all of the other little faces out there, and what are we going to leave to them? And so this is why I decided to run for president.
Well, you and I resonate. We're almost the same generation. We are within a few years of college graduation, so I assume we're in the same age bracket. We see the world probably through the same eyes. My father was not a college graduate. He was a small, he was an immigrant and all of that, and he struggled. I saw what it did to him, struggling. Okay, but he taught me the work ethic, so I relate to you. But when I watch you and I listen to you, I look past the stereotype that I'm supposed to see, okay? Because it's very easy to dismiss you. And, you know, people are going to dismiss you and say, oh, he's a black guy, so they moved him up. That's not true. They should understand what your background is. And I'm trying to say to you, I would emphasize my mathematical background. In an age of numbers where the numbers are being juggled by the phonies on Wall Street, your ability in physics and mathematics should be paramount in any discussion. You could run rings around the other candidates.
That's a good suggestion. That's a very good suggestion. I guess because of my, in all honesty, because of my humility, I don't pull it up. But, you know, you make a very good point. A lot of people don't know that, and if I don't bring it out, then a lot of the listeners won't.
But, listen, I swear to you, you know, we're talking as though we're sitting in a restaurant together, which is what I tend to do on a national radio show with millions of listeners. But, Mr. Kane, you're running for the presidency. I watched you, and I said, this man, you know, he talks the talk, but he's also walked the walk in order to talk the talk. Yep. And now I learned that you were a mathematics major in college, which is no mean achievement. That's a tough one. I know what it means to be a physics and mathematics major. That's a tough road to go down. And I would suggest in any debate, I think you ought to remind people of that. Now, it's true that Ms. Bachman was a tax attorney to her credit. However, people should know what your background is.
That's a good point. And by the way, my mathematics and physics degree was from Morehouse College, but I have a master's in computer science from Purdue University. I just thought I'd throw that in, Michael.
No, keep going. I think America's going to be pleasantly introduced to the new Herman Cain because, you know, you're a humble man. I can see that in your demeanor and the way you present yourself. I say to myself, God, what if he really gets, you know, look, it's very early on in the campaign and people are trying to decide who they want to bet on which horse. And a lot of people say, oh, I don't know. I like Herman Cain, but I don't know because he can't win. What do you mean he can't win? You certainly could win.
That's right. In fact, if they go to my website, HermanCain.com, HermanCain.com, they'll be able to look up more information on me and about me and see what my background is. They'll also be able to see many of the speeches that I have given across the country. You know, when you're watching the debate, you're only going to get a snapshot of an individual. And that debate last night that was on TV, I actually was on camera front and center for about 7.5 minutes out of all of those minutes because they were more interested in creating catfights between some of the candidates than allowing the American people to really learn something about what you would do. And so I encourage people to go look at my website where they can learn more about my views, my ideas, as well as my background.
I agree with you. And let me tell you, my audience, which is a largely independent audience, people may not understand this, but the Savage Nation is a swing audience in the sense that we represent the independent voter, I'd say, more so than any other show in America on a national level. And they're making up their mind which way to go, whether to even get involved in it. You see, this is the whole one. Mr. Kane, in my opinion, what's going to determine whether a Republican wins or Obama, God forbid, wins again is whether or not the base comes out. And if the Republicans run a liberal like Romney, the base will not come out. Obama will be reelected. That's the disastrous danger that we are facing, I believe.
I absolutely agree with you. And Michael, in all honesty, that's one of the reasons that I decided to run, because I didn't want to give the Republican Party another chance, excuse the expression, to screw it up. They have screwed it up enough times. They know how to lose. And this is why I decided that I'm going to run and give the American people and give conservatives another option, totally different. I am not a politician. I am a businessman, problem solver, And if you look at all of the people up there, including Romney, they are all politicians. And that's what we don't need, again, in Washington, D.C., in the White House. And that's what distinguishes me from all of the other candidates.
Do you have time to stay through the break and come back? Because I want to ask you a few questions about actual policies, like where you would stand on the war in Afghanistan and such. If you don't, I understand. But would you be able to stay with us?
I'm going to change some things around so I can do it, Michael. Thank you for that. I will stick around.
Well, that's good news. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to a man who I think should be listened to, a man who is running for the presidency of the United States of America, and his name is Mr. Cain. Don't forget that name, and you know why? Because I'm going to give you a phrase right now that could vault him right over the top. And Mr. Cain, here it is. You tell your campaign staff you got it from Michael Savage. All I ask for is a pepperoni pizza when you're president. And here it is. Cain is able. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation, heard in all 50 states. We're speaking with a presidential candidate who you've all heard about, kind of vaguely, I'm sure, because he's not got the flash of some of the others in some ways, but he's the real deal, in my opinion, Herman Cain, real business experience. And we learned tonight for the first time, at least I did, that he studied mathematics and physics in college, which is a darn big deal. Okay, no one goes into mathematics and physics who's trying to get ahead by faking it. I can tell you that from someone who knows how it is to do things the hard way. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Cain. You're on the Savage Nation. If you were president in the Afghan war, would you withdraw the troops? And if so, how long would you take to do so? Or would you escalate the situation over there? What would you do?
All right. First of all, we have to say, what would I do given the current situation?
Right.
Here's what I wouldn't do. The surge is working. So I think it is absolutely not the right idea to draw down the troops and, secondly, tell the enemy what you're going to do. The reason that we did the surge, because it was supposed to make things better. General Petraeus said things were getting better. Admiral Mullen said things were going to get better. But President Obama wouldn't listen to the experts on this issue. So what I would have done is I would have allowed the surge to continue to work. And then I would have listened to the generals on the commanders. I would have listened to the Joint Chiefs about when would have been the right time for us to draw it down. That's how I would have handled the situation mm-hmm. in Afghanistan.
And the other All right, clear enough. I understand. That's a very, very clear
yeah.
answer.
Yeah.
Now, another big issue that should be discussed, and I don't think it was last night, and that's because it's another, you know, third rail for politics, which is the 30 million illegal aliens in America. Who I fear Obama will grant amnesty to swing the votes toward the Democrat side. Would you grant amnesty to many of these people who are hardworking people, by the way? We're all not blind to the realities of the situation, but they are not here legally. How would you handle that situation?
I would not grant amnesty because I don't think that is fair to the ones who came here legally, and I don't think that is fair. I don't think that's fair to our laws. Here's what I would do, Michael. I would approach it this way. First, recognize that this is not one problem. This is four problems. This is what my analytic mind has taught me because of my background. We must secure the border for real. We must enforce the laws that are already on the books. We must promote the path to citizenship, and that's the legal path to citizenship. And then in order to deal with the illegals that are already here, empower the state. Empower the states to do what the federal government is not doing and won't do and can't do. They are incapable of solving the problem with the ones that are here. Allow all of the states to do what they do. I would not have sued Arizona. I would have sent Arizona a medal. The way to solve the problem is go to the people closest to the problem. Washington, D.C. can't dictate how we solve this problem. Allow the states to deal with this problem. Now, that being said, just because I want to build a high fence, that doesn't mean that we are not a nation with wide doors. Yes, the doors are wide open, but we want people to come here legally, even though we want to put fences here to keep people from sneaking in the back door.
All right, clear enough. And as a businessman, you and I both know that much of the hard work in this country and the manual labor is done by illegal aliens, and we all know that. You got to be blind not to see that, and you got to be
right.
a fool not to speak about the realities of it. So let's go to the hardest
right.
question of the night, which is the economy, the economy, the economy. As a mathematician, as a businessman, How would you rescue this economy from the abyss?
My economic vision, which I have documented on my website, HermanCain.com, has two phases. Phase one is to immediately give this economy a boost in the first 90 days after I become president. We must lower the top corporate and personal tax rate to a maximum of 25%. Secondly, zero taxes on repatriated foreign profits. And thirdly, zero capital gains tax. Fourthly, and most importantly, make them permanent. Make them permanent, because uncertainty is killing this economy.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to believe that that would provide a tremendous boost to this economy, which we badly need. And the reason that I would keep it that simple is because the American people can understand it, they embrace it, and they will put pressure on Congress to pass that first piece of legislation. I'm not going to throw a lot of other garbage in there that's going to confuse people. No,
right.
Keep it simple, and we can boost the economy. That's
I agree 100%, truthfully. And Herman Cain for president is all I could say, which leads us to the last point tonight. How is the media treating you?
The media is treating me modestly. In other words, the mainstream media, if you consider that ABC, CBS, and NBC, Michael, they are pretending that I don't exist. You want to know why? Because
I do know why. I can tell. I know exactly why, because you're the anti-Obama African American.
Exactly.
Herman Cain, I know you took an extra bit of time with us tonight, and I think we made an enormous impact on millions of Americans this evening. Please, folks, go to HermanCain.com and learn more about the man who should be our next president. And I want to thank you, Mr. Cain. And remember my slogan, Cain is able. It's not a bad one.
It's not a bad one, Michael. I already got some bumper stickers with that on.
Good luck. Thank you.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation on Rock and Roll Friday. If you just tuned in, you missed, I think, an incredibly important interview with a man who I think should be president, Herman Cain. Play the music for a minute.
Every time I look at you.
Anyway, as you know, Herman Cain is a true conservative. We better know him as the man who was the president or CEO of the Godfather pizza chain, etc. And the media, of course, wants you to believe, stereotypically as such, that as an African-American, he was pushed ahead simply because of his race. That's what they're doing to him. I read right through this. And I disclosed to you, the audience, by speaking with Mr. Cain, I didn't know it. I never met the gentleman, never spoke to him. I'm not involved in his campaign. That he was a math and physics major in college, which to me is already a halo around his head, number one. And he worked in the Navy in fire control systems as a civilian employee because of his analytical ability. And he moved ahead not because of his race, but because of his brains. So at the end of the interview, I asked Mr. Cain a very loaded question. I said, how's the media treating you? And he said, of course, not well. And I said, you know why? And he said, why? And I said, in my opinion, Michael Savage has his own view of things. It's because you are the African-American anti-Obama. It would embarrass Obama. See, they want you to believe that every African-American is a psycho left-wing liberal from you know where. They don't want you to know that there's a hardcore Christian conservative African-American base in America that is invisible. That Christian African-American core base in this country is the most invisible a political group in this country. They're never heard from. And yet the African-American church, churches around the country are still thriving. You don't hear from them. You don't see them. They'd like you to believe every African-American is like Al Sharpton or the old Jesse Jackson, you know, out there saying, bring it all down. We got to organize and this and that. But it isn't true. And I gave Mr. Cain a great line, Cain is able, which I think could launch him over the top. You know, I try to help McCain, who was not able in his last debate, when I said, say to Mr. Obama, we heard it all before, Mr. Obama. All you got to do is say to him in this last debate with a smile, Reagan-esque. You remember my show? Last presidential debate between McCain and Obama. I said, get up there, Mr. McCain, and say, Mr. Obama, we've heard it all before. It's trickle-up poverty. Now, he could have said that. That would have been the end of the campaign for Obama, and McCain would have been president. As bad as he is, he would have been at least someone we knew where he was born, and we knew that his patriotism lied with America. That we would have known for sure. He wouldn't be catering to the opposition. Let's put it that way. Even though he's a liberal Republican, at least we know where he stands when it comes to America. Okay, McCain would have been better. But he didn't listen to me, wouldn't come on the show. Now, Mr. Cain just came on the show, and I got to say this now with no bitterness. It means nothing to me one way or the other. You know who won't come on the show? A woman many of you sent money to, Michelle Bachmann. That says more about her than you want to know. I know many of you don't want to hear this because you think she's a front runner. But I've seen races before. She's not going to go to the end of the road. She will not make it. She will not make it for a number of reasons. Not because she won't come on this show. That's a symptomatic of what's wrong with her as a candidate. It's not that she won't come on the show. Yeah, it bothers me personally. It shows me there's something wrong there with her thinking and her advisors. It's because anyone who would stab my audience in the back like this, who sent the money when she was down and out and came on the show and begged you to help her, and she begged you. She said, oh, Nancy Pelosi wants to knock me out of Congress. I sent her money. You sent her money. And now she won't even come on the show and meet the Savage Nation. To her detriment, by the way. By the way, to her detriment. So he came on the show. Romney had dinner with me. We ate together. I was in San Francisco. When was it? A year and a half ago, December. I remember it because my tooth broke that night. That's right. To this day, I remember it. I had a broken. I had a dinner with Mr. Romney in the window of the North Beach restaurant. You could ask anyone who was there. Him and I, one-on-one. Nice man. I really respect him and his story, but he will not come on the show. He won't even acknowledge I exist. And I remember it, as I say, because I went home from the restaurant that night. I was excited about the interview, and I ate a piece of hard Italian bread and broke a tooth. It was a new implant. Ping went the pin. Ping went the titanium pin that set me back a year. So I do remember that interview. I'll always remember Romney for the broken titanium pin in my mouth. So here it is. I mean, here we are. We're sitting here. What day is it already? I don't know. The month, the year, the date. Life goes on. It moves. August 12, 2011. I'm looking at the security cameras in the studio. I see individuals walking around the perimeter of the property. 16 cameras. But they're friendlies. I see their friendlies. There's another friendly coming in the side door. No, I have 16 security cameras up. Now, I see a friendly just came in the side door by the garage. The perimeter is secured, ladies and gentlemen, of the Savage Nation. A friendly just came in with a toolbox. There is no black helicopter on the lawn of the radio studio. Oh, man, I can't wait till it. You know, I'm looking forward to tonight's. I love the show tonight. I'm feeling better than I did an hour ago. You know, I don't do well with traveling, the jet lag and the this. Someone wants a Teddy update. Arizona, Brent, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. The news is just so abysmal. We're tired of hearing about Obama. We all know what he is. Just want to hear more about Teddy and just maybe just one suggestion, maybe some kind of a way that we could help the economy out through Teddy and through you having an autographed picture of you and Teddy together and the proceeds could go to the Savage Nation. Yeah,
I have a great picture of Teddy and I, actually. It's on the cover of one of my, I think, my autobiographical short stories, Psychological Nudity. It's me and Teddy. So you want a Teddy update? I did not take him on this trip with me. Normally I do, because the heat here would have been too heavy for him, okay? I didn't want to bring him into the heat. So he doesn't go to a kennel. This dog has a better life than most people. He's with Irene, who's a family friend, and she watches him and other dogs in her house, and he sleeps in a bed with her, okay? By the way, Teddy has a companion named Tasha. Teddy is like the circus dog. He can perform tricks, and Tasha's like the dummy. You know how horses, some horses, they give them a goat in the stall to make them feel good? You know what I mean? Tasha's like a two-pound poodle, dumb as can be. Thick as a piece of wood, doesn't do anything, doesn't respond, doesn't act like a dog. But she's a part of the family. He ignores her. He steps over her for the food. But they kiss once in a while. He's with her and a couple other dogs. He's with Irene has a dog, a basset hound named, I forget his name already. They all sleep in the bed. He's doing great. That's all. Did you hear my interview with Kane?
Yes, I did. Yes, he's a very formidable candidate, and it's nice to see a side of his mathematical genius that we don't.
Yeah, we didn't know that, and the media wouldn't want you to know it because he's African American. You're supposed to make the negative assumptions about him. This is why the media is ignoring him, because he is the anti-Obama African American candidate. See, but he could come from the back of the pack and go right to the front. It was so far out that if we can get to know more about Herman Cain, this man could easily be the contender. And I believe in a head-on-head with Obama because of his sincerity and his background. I think he would make a formidable opponent in a debate, don't you?
Yes. Wasn't he also a radio talk show host, as you are?
Oh, God, you're kidding me. I didn't know he was a competitor.
Yeah, I believe he was WSB Atlanta, I believe, was his home station.
Oh, my goodness. So you mean there's a chance that I could become a candidate one of these days, huh? You know, I'll tell you, one of these days, I've been asked to run. The Congress has a 10% approval rating. I could easily win a congressional race. I could win for Senate. Imagine if I ran in California, I'd have to raise $100 million, and I became... Let's run... You know what? Let me go through this with you. It's 15 minutes after the hour. I'll do it in about 2 minutes or less. Let us say I run against Dianne Feinstein or Barbara Boxer. And although I'm a super flaming right-winger in California, which is allegedly liberal, which is not so liberal, by the way, if you look at the actual... If you go out of the porn belt of California and into the heartland, to the mountains, to the farmlands, to the interior valley, a guy like me is a reflection of what they actually think, okay? Forget the porn operators in the San Francisco area, okay? Forget the scam artists in Los Angeles and the movie makers. So, okay, let's say I run. Now, let's say I'm a dark horse and I win. Very tough race. They'd smear me this way to Sunday. Let's say I win. I become a U.S. senator, for argument's sake. Now, Senator Savage, right? I want to bring reality to you. Do you remember a comedian by the name, I forget his name, the fat guy who was on Saturday Night Live? What's his name? I don't remember. He was a bad comedian, and he's a worse politician. That slob who looks like Michael Moore. The slob who became a U.S. senator. Remember him? Al Franken, okay? Now, here is a guy who was as unqualified to be a senator as anyone in the history of the U.S. Senate. They put him in by jury rigging it. They manipulated against his candidate. They got fake votes, in my opinion. He won by a very small, and they make him a senator, right? Now, here he is, left-wing fanatic, big-mouth, blubberhead, Senator Al Franken. Now, do you remember you heard from him in the first few days, weeks? He was shooting his fat mouth off, and they shut him up. They took him inside, and they took him to the woodshed. And what the Democrats must have said to him is something along these lines. They must have said, listen, Sonny boy, you had your fun on Saturday Night Live. You're not in a comedy show anymore, so dummy up, shut your mouth, get in line. You're absolutely at the back of the bus in the Democrat Senate. Shut up. Do as we say, or not only will we starve your state of money and you'll not get reelected, but I'll tell you something else, Sonny boy. We're going to run a primary against you, and we'll throw you back out into the cold. So shut up. You never heard from him again. Am I right? That's how politics works. So... Now, having told you my analysis of what happened to Fat Mouth, let's take me. I'm opinionated. I'm outspoken. I'm a flaming conservative. I win the U.S. Senate in California in the greatest upset in American history. Do you think the Republican Party would treat me any differently than they treated Al Franken? The difference between me and Al Franken is this. I wouldn't shut up. You know what I'd say to him? Go ahead. I dare you. I'll do it for 6 years, and I don't care what you do to my district, because I'm going to straighten this party out. But let me tell you, I'm not going to do it anyway. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Today, there are two different versions of the American dream.
One views the money you earn as yours and best allocated by you. The other believes the government should level out society's wealth. It's communism. In a startling new DVD, you'll discover how the current administration plans to steal your money and why they won't stop until they get it all. I Want Your Money is an award-winning film shown in theaters nationwide. Swiss America and I feel the truth presented in this important film is critical, okay? So get this. While supplies last, callers will get a free copy of I Want Your Money on DVD free. $25 value. Call 800-289-2646. Call 800-289-2646. I Want Your Money is entertaining, informative, and inspiring, like Michael Savage. Discover the importance of owning gold and hard assets that the government cannot print. Restore the original American dream today. Get your free DVD. Call 800-289-2646. 800-289-2646. While supplies last, call 800-289-2646.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Is that a shame?
My children. It is the Savage Nation. We just had the anti-Obama on, Herman Cain. Remember my phrase, you heard it here first, Cain is able.
You broke my heart. When you said we'll part, ain't that a shame?
Anywho, here we are. I want to talk about a DVD I bought called Lion of the Desert with Anthony Quinn and Oliver Reed. I had seen it by accident on one of the channels a few weeks ago, and then I got the DVD. I watched it twice now. I'm so amazed by this movie, and I'm going to tell you why. It relates to our futile wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and our wars against the Muslim world. Let me be very frank with you. The year is 1929, and dictator Benito Mussolini, played by Rod Steiger, is faced with the 20-year-long war waged by Bedouin patriots to combat Italian colonization in Africa. So Mussolini appoints General Rodolfo Graziani, played by Oliver Reed, governor of Libya, and he's confident that he can crush the rebellion of the Libyan Bedouins and restore the glories of Imperial Rome. Now, it's very inspirational. The Bedouin resistance against the Italians, by the way, is extremely inspirational. And Omar Mukhtar is played by Anthony Quinn in the most astonishing role of Quinn's entire career. I loved every movie Anthony Quinn was ever in. I loved him in Zorba the Greek. I loved him in that. He never did a bad movie. He was a natural man's man. But Anthony Quinn plays Omar Mukhtar, the Libyan Bedouin who fights the Italians for 20 years in this movie, in a way you cannot believe. It actually defies your greatest expectations. At the end of the movie, there's a feature in it called, the Making of an Epic, how they made the movie in the desert. You know, these epic movies are not made anymore. First of all, it was filmed with real cameras, not digital. They actually hired thousands of extras. They made World War I Italian tanks in England to bring into the desert. I never saw anything like this production. So in that sequence, the documentary about the making of the movie, they show Anthony Quinn, and they show a picture of the Bedouin who he portrays, whatever his name is, Omar Mukhtar. It was shocking how he became that personality. So Anthony Quinn, and remember, he was a Muslim, the Omar Mukhtar. Anthony Quinn grows a white beard and plays this noble peasant. He was a teacher, really, who fights the Italians in the hills and in the desert for 20 years. And they said Anthony Quinn so loved the role of Omar Mukhtar that he wouldn't shave his beard off for a year and a half. Now, this is only one part of it. When they hang Mukhtar at the end of this movie, he turns to the general who's going to hang him, and he says, "I will outlive the hangman," he said, "because after me you'll have my son and then my son's son. And then my son's son's son, you will never colonize our country." You know something? He's right. And let me tell you something else. Get the hell out of the Middle East. Get the hell out of there.
Savage.
Baby, baby, how I want you. Baby, baby, how I need you. Baby, baby, you're the only one. 2, 3, 4. Baby, baby.
So, there it is. I you know, we interviewed Herman Cain. I gave you a great slogan for Mr. Cain. Cain is able, put him over the top for sure. You know, of all the candidates, he's the only one willing to come on the show. I guess he knows that you're an independent crowd that listens to the Savage Nation. You do actually represent the entire audience that the politicians are trying to win. I mean, the diehard Dems are going to vote for Obama. The diehard Repubes are going to vote for whoever the Repubes put up. But the huge 40% swing vote, which is you, the Savage Nation, he's the only one who'll come on the show. So think about that one. That means he could win, not just because he came on the show, but because he understands. He understands America. Then I talked about a movie, Lion of the Desert, old movie, 1981. It's stunning. It's an amazing film. Anthony Quinn, Oliver Reed. But the director was an Arab. I think he was Iranian, Mustafa Akkad. He was a director-producer. Phenomenal movie. Rod Steiger as Mussolini in the opening scenes is worth the entire film. The glory, the glory of the settings, you know, the imperial settings of the fascist dictatorship are fantastic to watch, just fantastic. And the dignity of his opponent in this Bedouin, this Muslim Bedouin, played by Anthony Quinn, as I said to you, Lionel, that is astounding. A guerrilla fighter, in other words, Omar Mukhtar, Anthony Quinn, who committed himself to a war that cannot be won in his lifetime, meaning he knows he can't win against the Italians, but he fights them to his death 20 years in the hills and in the deserts. And as I, again, as I say, when they are about to hang him, when the sentence is given down to him by the guy who plays the General Rodolfo Graziani, Oliver Reed, he says, "I will outlive the hangman." He said, "Then you will have to fight my son and my son's son and then my son's son's son, because you will never occupy our land." And he said, no country has the right to occupy another country. So, you know, it so resonated in with me. This move, I wouldn't say it changed my view of the world. I mean, I've had a pretty clear view of what's going on in the world prior to this. But the fact of the matter is that if you actually think that we're going to subdue the Afghanis and make them into happy camel burger proprietors, you know, what do you envision, a chain of camel burger stands in Afghanistan? You're going to take these tribal people who are living in a thousand years ago, you're going to turn them into Burger King, a Camel King, whatever? It's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. So there's much more at stake than this democracy movement in the Middle East. I don't really believe that's it anyway. It has to do with many other geopolitical elements that we know nothing about. Oil, opium, you can name it and pretty much figure it out. But it has nothing to do, or very little to do, with bringing democracy to the Middle East, because look at what happened in Iraq. That's democracy? You call Iraq a democracy right now? Ask the Christians who are dying in Iraq if it's a democracy. You talk the Arab Spring is the spread of a democracy? Take a look. Ask the Christians in the Coptic Christians in Egypt if it's a democracy that Hillary Clinton and George Soros and Jimmy Carter and Brzezinski have instigated. So as I say to you, you know, let's look at things clearly. I don't know what we're doing there anymore. I didn't know what we were doing there 2 years ago. I said we should get out of Afghanistan, incidentally. I'm on record anyway having said that, so I'm not going to change it all of a sudden to make you think I said something else. Because it was a zero-sum game. There was no winning there. It's known as the graveyard of empires. And the fact of the matter is our empire is in such trouble right now, we don't need to be another one of the empires buried in the graveyard of Afghanistan. You know, these wars have bankrupted this country. You just analyze the cost of Iraq. How many trillions of dollars did it cost us to give the Iraqis their freedom, so-called, to liberate the Shia Muslim from the Sunni oppression? How many trillions did it cost us, and what did we get for it? Tell me what we got for it. Did they give us so much as a barrel of oil? In a previous book of mine, I called for reparations from Iraq. Bush lied. When he said at the beginning of the outset of the war, rather, he said, "We will get reparations in the form of oil." They didn't send us one free barrel of oil. In fact, they stabbed us in the back after they were liberated in Iraq, and they gave the first oil contracts to China. So where's the reparations? And let alone the men who came back in caskets or in pieces or lost their bodies and their souls in Iraq. We haven't gotten anything economically from those people. Why? Where's the will of our leadership to say, you know what, you owe us money, it's overdue, it's $3 trillion, and we want oil, and we're taking it, and we have the military to do it, and if you don't like it, you know what, let's meet you on the battlefield, we're just taking the oil, and siphon it right out of Iraq, get the $3 trillion that way. You want to straighten the budget out? You can do it with Mexico, too. Mexico has the fourth largest oil reserve on the planet, the last I checked. It can be piped across the border. Why don't we demand reparations for the high social costs that the illegals have leveled upon us for the last 20 years? You want an equation? There's an equation. One barrel of oil for each illegal per year. There you go. You want a budget deficit straightened out? Now, Michael Savage, plain talking, plain thinking. Okay, I understand what needs to be done, but there's no political ability to do any of this because by the time you wind up in a position of Senate, at the Senate level, you're already so compromised, there's no way to ever, ever hear a word of truth come out of them. Which brings me back to the radio show. After all, I'm not a politician. I'm only a radio talk show host. This is only one man's opinion. You got to understand that. And many stations don't like very heated dialogue anymore. They're afraid of it. They want something much more moderate in tone. They want something that's more, easy listening. Easy listening. No criticism of the government. No criticism of Obama. Look the other way. Strap on your rose-colored glasses. You know what I'm saying? Well, I can't help it. I'm too far into this to become somebody else. And I know that I represent the mind of the American people, especially those who listen to talk radio. I mean, I could ask you a question right now, and, you know, I can get your answers. Do you want me to become a more mellow Mike? You want me to become a more mellow talk show host? I could do that. Would you like FM Bob? I can do the old FM Bob that I used to do. Hey, you got the waterbed music. I can give him the FM Bob. Anybody got that? It doesn't matter. Well, whatever you want me to do. I mean, I'm at your disposal here. I'm not a tissue, but I'm here to entertain you, educate you. Desafinato. Play Desafinato. Desafinato. Okay, here, set me up. Let me get my mind into this FM Bob. Hello, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation. This is the new Michael Savage. The new Michael Savage, who is no longer inflamed by what's going on politically. We're here simply to give you a nice, easy listening experience. You're going to hear nothing but good things about our government. You're going to hear how good Dick Durbin is, and you're going to hear how wonderful Dianne Feinstein is, and Dick Plummer, husband, and how they put America first. You're going to hear nothing but good about the president and how he needs a vacation in Martha's Vineyard. And the next time the First Lady takes another trip, you're not going to hear a word out of my mouth about the extravagant costs or the high number of personnel who attend to her like she's a queen. You're going to hear nothing but the statements that the First Lady needs that trip to Africa or to Portugal or to Spain. And ladies and gentlemen, the reason I'm doing it is because I want you to be happy with me. I want you to feel good about the Savage Nation. In fact, I want you to feel only good things about the government and about the president and about the Senate. Because I, too, am an American, and as an American, I'd like their ratings to go up. I'd like the president to be loved, not to be looked askance by anyone. And so when the president gives a speech to a group of Muslims, and he says things such as, Muslim Americans help keep us safe, I will not remind you of Major Nidal Hassan, who committed the atrocity of the Fort Hood massacre. Or when the president, at the same speech, says that Islam has always been part of our American family, I would be the last to criticize the president, for who am I to criticize a man as brilliant as he, with such a distinguished background? Yes, if he says Islam has always been part of our American family, why then it must be true, because he is the president, and he is hosting an iftar dinner, or is celebrating Ramadan in the state dining room. Who am I, a little kid from the Bronx, who grew up in an immigrant family, to know any more than this man who was born, well, somewhere on the earth, to a distinguished family with such a loving, loving background and with such a great love for America, a man who sat in a preacher's house of worship for so many years, hearing how evil America was and how it disrespected minorities and how we should hate America. He must know what he's doing. He must know very much what he's doing. And so as I say, as we draw this segment to a close, this is Michael Savage in the new mellow voice. You will never hear another voice of contention coming from this speaker again. Yeah, right. Okay. You just had your fantasy moment. Yeah, I could do that. So if that's what you want, I'll give you that. Dow closes up over 100 points. Dow Jones Industrial Average held Thursday's gains. The British up over 100 points Friday. The close capped the week of wild trading on Wall Street and marked the first day this week that Dow did not swing by more than 400 points. Blah, blah, blah. Actually, if you go to my website, michaelsavage.com, the picture of that I got from the Post of Soros, he's seen in a new light. In fact, if I were FM Mike, I would talk kindly about Soros, because any man who makes billions of dollars by trading currency and having never produced a product in his life must be better than anyone on the earth. Think about it. If a man can make billions of dollars without producing a product or a service that anybody actually needs, how can I criticize such a man in a capitalist society? He should be seen as a demigod, as he is by the people who we put in power, like Obama. Here's Savage interview with Herman Cain. It's already up on my incredible website. Thank you, WorldNet Daily. Hear the interview with Herman Cain, the anti-Obama interview. And it's up on the website already. Where's that picture of Soros in his underwear? I mean, in a bathing suit on the beach. It's down already. Art, please, if you're listening, put it up. It's so worth people going to. Here, George Soros sued for $50 million by ex-girlfriend. But the better picture is, if you link up to that, is him in a bathing suit in the St. Bart's with another gold digger laying there in the sand. Wait, this one I got to see. I couldn't believe it. The guy's a... Where? Oh, no, they took it down. Oh, look at him stepping out. White pants, an Aloha shirt, the dress shoes without socks, you know, in the style of the big gi in St. Bart's, you know, the leather shoes without socks to show how cool you are. The typical tropical look. Oh, hey, put on the leather shoes without socks. Financier George Soros dated Brazilian soap actress Adriana Ferrier, who is 5 decades younger. Only 5 decades younger? What's wrong with him? That's the best he can do? She's only 50 years younger than him? What's the best he can do with all that money? I heard a joke last week about old lechers like, not like him. He's not a lecher. He's a financier, but an old lecher. Someone told me the story. He was in L.A. at a party. The guy must be 90, and he dates young women, 25, 30. You know, it's not hard to do in America. You throw some money around. So one of the younger guys, good-looking guy, 35, 40, goes up to the old guy and he says, God, how the heck do you get girls 25 years old? You're 85 years old. And he looks at the young guy and he says, my next girlfriend is an embryo. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. And we've had a lot of serious time so far and a little fun time as well. The Soros thing with the girlfriends, I mean, it's a new side of him. It's like learning that Herman Cain had a background in mathematics and physics. Who would have known that a leftist fanatic like this, that a leftist octogenarian like Soros, who has such an enmity for America, would be this frisky? I don't think I can't use words that are family friendly. I can. The sultry actress and the mogul, who's worth some $14.5 billion, had dated for 5 years before he heartlessly dumped her a year ago, the lawsuit says. But they briefly reconciled, and while spending a romantic night together, that's a euphemism for you know what, he whispered in her ear that he'd given the apartment he promised her to another woman. While still in bed, Soros slapped Ferrier across the face and proceeded to put his hands around her neck in an attempt to choke her lawsuit claims. That's BS. It's another DSK lie, in my opinion. Soros 80 then allegedly attempted to strike her with a glass lamp, and though he narrowly missed, it smashed on the floor and she cut her foot, which required 3 stitches. This is all for the New York Post. According to police reports, she called cops and no charges were filed. Soros, quote, denies throwing the lamp and totally denies trying to choke her, a friend of the billionaire told the Post. This is a lot about a money in apartment. I agree 100%. I mean, what's right is right. He may be a leftist, and he may be an anti-American piece of garbage, who I think is the most dangerous evil man on the planet. But I can guarantee you, as I sit here, this is another trumped-up case in my estimation. A Brazilian soap star. A beautiful Brazilian soap star. I mean, there's so many things wrong with those four words. Brazilian soap star? Anyway, he gave another apartment, this and that. I don't know what these guys, what's with them? How do they hate the country? Look how far he's come. He hasn't produced a product or a service that anyone ever wanted. And he's worth two... $14.5 billion for never having made so much as a bar of soap. The man didn't make a bar of soap or a pizza. Nothing. And he's worth $14.5 billion and he hates the country. Every other word out of his mouth is anti-American. How is this possible? How could this be? How do they get this way? And why do they all go to St. Bart's in the winter with fetus girlfriends? Why is that? I mean, what is with these people? Do they think that it makes them sound clever to go around smearing and hating America? I ask myself repeatedly over and over again, I do. I swear. Arlene in Chicago on W, and welcome to the show.
Dr. Savage, you are hysterical today. I swear you should have brought Teddy with you to keep you in line. You're really, we're really having fun listening to you.
Well, that, and you didn't have one serious moment yet, huh?
Well, of course we have those, but you seem to smooth things over and give us...
I did. I went from the angry to the sublime. Let's put it to you that way. I mean, how could you not get angry when you see that Obama's celebrating Ramadan in the state dining room? And he says things like he does in clip three. Play clip three for Arlene, who may have missed it while she was laughing.
Now, this evening reminds us of both the timeless teachings of a great religion and the enduring strengths of a great nation. Like so many faiths, Islam has always been part of our American family.
Oh, let's stop. Muslim- All right. So George Washington now was Muslim. I mean, doesn't that grate you?
Absolutely.
What do you mean Islam has always been part of our American family? Can anyone confirm that this is true?
Savage, he thinks the White House is his house. He just went on air welcoming these players and welcome to my house. It's not his house.
Ah, oh, the basketball and the rap people, the rap barbecue?
I don't know what field he's in. He's not even in left field. He's somewhere else.
No, you're right. I think he's in his own world. I truly believe that. New York! New York, New York, New York. George in New York on WOR. George, what's on your mind tonight, George?
Got to agree with Obama. Islam has always been part of the U.S. from the very beginning. In fact, the Constitution class warships to fight the Islamic slave empire called the Barbary States, that they were created. They were state of the art, and they were created just to fight the Barbary States.
You're right. So in that sense, Obama is right when he says Islam has always been part of the American family.
Not only that, all of the slaves brought to the New World, as it was called, by the Europeans, were originally sold by the Europeans to the Europeans.
Oh, that's right. The Arab Muslim ensnared the African and put them into chains. How did I forget that?
You don't. And the fight continued and continued. So
when he says Islam has always been part of American family, he means as slave traders and as enemies of the American mercantile fleet.
1784, the first ship was...
Yeah, and let me remind you of something else, which you probably know, George. I can tell you're tongue-in-cheek tonight, and I'm glad you waited so long. You know where the term leatherneck originated? I told this to the son of a Marine drill sergeant, who's a mature man himself. He didn't know this. The word leatherneck, the term leatherneck, originated because the troops who were put on our mercantile ships to fight the Muslim pirates, again off the Barbary coast of Africa, were given leather swaths around their neck to protect them from the sword blows of the pirates, the Muslim pirates they were fighting. You know that, right?
Right. And the pirates, the first pirates aboard the ship when they were going to, they were given the first choice of the slave.
So, in other words, Obama wasn't lying when he said that.
He wasn't.
When he was saying Islam has always been part of our American family. I had no idea.
Oh.
And when he says Muslims have long contributed to the strength and character of our country, he means it as well.
Absolutely. We would.
I didn't see it that way. I didn't know you were referring back to the slave trade and such. How do you like that? Look what you can learn from talk radio, George. Look what you can learn talking to people about how honest Obama is. It's amazing.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Story today, and it's my featured picture of Obama, is Obamacare has been ruled unconstitutional in a principal aspect of it by an 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, federal court. Michael Savage was the only one in the media who was right. I wrote about this in Trickle-Up Poverty, citing the Schechter case from the period when the last socialist president who ran America into the ground, FDR, was president. Again, thank you for reading about this in Trickle-Up Poverty. I was right about this, not Michelle Bachmann, who's claiming she was right. And if she was right, it's because she heard it on my show, because no one knew about that case but me in the media. So thank you, Michelle Bachmann, for, again, showing your true colors. Britain's middle-class rioters were revealed, by the way. They weren't all poor. One was a millionaire's daughter, another was an aspiring musician, another an organic chef. They're the ones who rioted, along with the rabble. Consumer confidence worse ever since Jimmy Carter. Find out more about UK's ban of Michael Savage. Did CAIR, that's the wonderful Council on, American-Islamic Relations, a pressure group, in other words, for Muslim invasions, did they stop the CIA conference on Islamic radicalization? We'll never know. Syrian forces killed 10 protesters after Friday prayers. China flexes naval muscle. U.S. threatens Gaza cutoff after Hamas crackdown. Taliban planning a spectacular terror attack. Hey, after the London riots, why not? Muslims urge British rioters to topple the system, saying chaos is useful to militants in London. It's also useful to Obama in America. Blacks attack Indians and Pakistanis in England. That's one of the biggest subtexts of what went on. George Soros, dirty old man, sued for $50 million by ex-girlfriend who claims, she claims he allegedly tried to choke her in his dispute about real estate. Didn't know he had it in him. Even old lefties, I guess, have it in them. Obama spoke to Muslims and said, Islam has always been part of our American family. That's interesting. I didn't know George Washington or Jefferson were Islamic, but hey. Ron Paul warned Savage of next bubble burst. Savage says America has been hoodwinked. He warns of Leninist Obama's doom path. It's on michaelsavage.com. Let's go to the bottom of the page. British teens describe rioting as a shopping spree. Mexican teen first in U.S. killed by a vampire bat. Muslim tortures daughter for leaving Islam. And on the bottom of the page, abuse of power coming out in a few weeks, a thriller from Michael Savage. Order your copy at amazon.com. Play the clip.
We need the president to be, we need him to be FDR. We need him to come forward and say, I see the great misery that exists in this country. I see that not only are there 14 million Americans out of work, but another 12 million Americans that are underemployed. We have to put America back to work at good paying jobs. We need a new WPA. Rebuild America's bridges, water system, sewer system. We need to harness the technological genius of our country and put millions to work building new energy technologies that we can install in American homes. And there's ways that we can come back in our economy, but we can't take the minimalist approach, which this administration seems to be mired in.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. Okay, moving on. Kevin in New York, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to say that tax increases, the debt limit increases, also coincide almost all the time with tax breaks for the super rich, and that taxes.
All right, Kevin, I recognize that you're limited in your economic understanding.
And I know you didn't hear the opening of my show where I talked about Barack Obama as a descendant of Vladimir Ilyich Lenin. But do you know that in 1987, the richest 1% of Americans paid 1/4 of all income taxes, and that the bottom poorest paid 6% of all taxes? And you know in 07 what happened? The richest 1% paid 40% of all income taxes, and the bottom 50% of earners paid just under 3%. So how does that fit your argument that the rich are getting richer while the poor are getting poorer, when the rich are paying more taxes and the poor are paying fewer taxes? How does that work, Kevin?
Because the rich aren't actually paying more taxes.
Where do you come up with this from? This is something that you get out of what? Your mother was a communist on the oil cloth in Brooklyn?
Not at all. When President Kennedy was...
Wait a minute. Sir, I'm one of the rich. I'm a very successful author and broadcaster. I pay a full amount of taxes, both state and federal. My state taxes are over 10%. Are you aware of that? I don't have any lawyers who can jury rig that. Where do you get the idea that we don't pay taxes?
I'm not saying tax the individual except for the super rich. I mean, like George Soros.
How about General Electric? How do you feel about Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric, and that corporation pays no income tax in the U.S.? Does that bother you like it bothers me?
Yes, it does. This is what I'm trying to...
So, therefore, a guy like you on the left and me in the center-right can agree that large corporations who have evaded taxes entirely are conducting themselves in a criminal manner, and they should be the target of a congressional investigation. This is what I'm trying to say.
Right, but it's not just corporations. How much is Jeffrey Immelt paying in taxes compared to an average American making...
I really don't know. I don't know because he's a private individual. I just don't know what his tax returns are. I'm sure he has to pay, you know, the 37% or whatever the taxation rate is for people who earn over $1 million a year.
Right, but then he gets all the tax breaks, which reduce that 37% to possibly, say, 29%.
You may be right about that. I do not know, truthfully, Kevin. What income bracket are you in yourself?
I would have to say I'm lower middle class now.
All right, but you have a resentment towards the rich, which is understandable. This is an age-old resentment. But you're actually arguing that the corporations who are evading taxes should pay more?
Yes, but also individuals.
Well, let's make believe you and I just met, and I'm a rich guy compared to you. I'm over 60 years of age. I've been working since I'm 5 years old. I've done very well because no matter what society tried to do to me, no matter how many different ways I was kicked, I wouldn't quit because I was raised to fight and I was raised to work. I could have retired years ago and I'm still working. If my taxes are to go up, I'm giving you an example right now, Kevin. If they were to raise my taxes next year, I would quit radio and a lot of people would not have an income. Do you understand that?
Yes, but have you not benefited over the past decade from tax breaks?
No, I have no tax breaks. What tax breaks? I pay retail. I pay retail. There are no real trick tax breaks for the individual paying taxes, Kevin. There are none.
Well, you said you were rich.
Yeah, I'm rich because I worked my behind off. That's why I'm rich.
Well, no, I didn't take
it from you. Did I take it from you?
No.
All right, so where do you think I wrote a book and it did very well. Does that mean I stole it from somebody?
No, not at all, people.
All right, so if a singer sings a song and produced a CD and it sold millions of copies, should they not earn money on that CD because they had talent and people bought their record or their CD?
No, but they should pay taxes on what they earned.
But they do pay taxes. They do pay taxes, and their taxes make certain that those who work in the record industry are rewarded, just as the sale of my books keep a lot of people employed, the publishers, the printers, the distributors, the advertising agencies, the shippers, they all have jobs because people have books that occasionally hit. You know how many books don't hit? 99 out of 100 don't make any money at all. They live off the 1 out of 100 that do make money. So you can't suddenly punish the successful and expect them to kill themselves to write a book, can you?
No, I don't want to punish the successful. I want them to pay their fair share.
What would a fair share be? What percent should we be paying?
Well, I can't actually say what a fair share for a super rich...
My federal tax, in my case, is, I think, 37%. My state tax is around 9 or 10%. Is that enough, or should I pay more?
No. But what about the people...
Well, I don't know, no. You mean I shouldn't pay more, or I should pay more?
What about the 1% who are making...
That's another story. I don't know who they are.
But when I read that General Electric earned $5 billion in the U.S. and paid no taxes because they hired former IRS agents, it frosts me, as it should frost you, Kevin. And now you have to ask yourself, how did they get away with it? Who is Obama's number one corporate friend? Is it not Jeffrey Immelt? Jeffrey Immelt is his job czar. How do you feel about Jeff Immelt closing down a 115-year-old X-ray plant in Wisconsin and sending it to Shanghai, China? Is that something that should be allowed? I don't think so.
I don't think so either, but if you...
No, I think that the government should stop Jeffrey Immelt from having the authority to ship a factory that he had nothing to do with building. Before this guy was a glint in his grandfather's eye, that corporation had an X-ray plant in Wisconsin. Where does he get the nerve to send that plant to Shanghai, China? It's like the enemy within, for God's sakes.
Well, again, our government actually gives tax breaks to companies that send jobs overseas, so they are waving the flag of America.
You see, at the end of the day, those in the lower middle class like yourself and I, who came from a lower middle class background and worked my way out of poverty, basically, really see the world the same way. We don't really see the world in a different way. I pay my fair share of taxes. I create jobs through what I do. But I really don't want to pay any more taxes because I will quit. I will simply not pay another dime in taxes. I'm taxed to death.
Savage.
Let's go to the next caller, Tucson, Arizona. Steve, welcome to the program.
Michael, I did something, and you motivated me to do it that I normally don't do, but because of the sincerity of your voice, I've been a relatively new listener. I've been listening for about 5 years. It was a tip from a friend at work. I have to say I'm a recovering liberal for about the last 15 years, but when you were talking about your book and how it moved up on the chart, I'm a reader. I have one of those Kindles carried with me everywhere. You motivated me to do something, an impulse buy, went to the site, clicked on the button, and I guess next month it's going to be delivered to me.
I want to ask you something. Are you reading books on Kindle as opposed to buying instead of paper? You know, Mrs. S. just traveled, and she said two out of three people on the airplanes who were reading at all were reading Kindle editions of books. Is that really the trend? Is that big?
You know why I like it, Michael? Very simply, when I carry my Kindle with me, it's like I've got a library. At this point, I've got about 200 books stored in this very...
So in other words, you can read many books on... I honest to God, I'm not into the Kindle thing because the screens hurt my eyes. I'd rather read a book if I'm... It rests... You know, it's funny, the feedback from a piece of paper actually rests my soul, my eyes, and screens tend to agitate me, but that's a separate story. But I understand the convenience of a Kindle edition in that, let's say you're traveling, you're on an airplane, one little screen, no 10 books, you don't have to carry a book bag. And so, in other words, weight alone is a reason to do it. I mean, just carry the carrying weight, right?
That, as well as the fact that I don't believe that it affects the eyes negatively when you compare it to a page, because I've been a reader all of my life. It's just within the last couple of years that I've switched over to the Kindle, and I just really enjoy having a library in my hands wherever I go.
So, in other words, you could be reading Abuse of Power, and then if you want to move to another book, you can shift to that other book seamlessly and then go back to the other book, back and forth.
I can do that. At any given time, Michael, I'm reading three different books.
No, I was going to say that. It's very funny you should say it, and it's an interesting phenomenon that I never talked about. I very often will watch two or three TV shows at once at night. I'll jump around from a movie to a military history sometimes to even another topic. Not so much because I can't focus on it. It's because I'm more interested in the three things than I am in any one of them. All right. Hey, I appreciate you buying Abuse of Power, which is putatively based upon a true story about a media figure who was smeared by the left machine and then tries to smuggle himself into Britain to stop a terrorist attack and find out who was behind not only smearing him but conducting terrorist attacks on American soil leading up to a U.S. senator, by the way. I believe that one of the reasons that this novel is going to be a hit in many languages is because it touches a raw nerve
not only about terrorism, but about the smearing of a decent individual, almost a Billy Budd-like character. In this case, it's Jack Hatfield, who is the new Billy Budd. He could become a new Billy Budd, I hope, in literature. And the other reason is that one of the heroes of the book happens to be a Muslim woman in the book, which is very unexpected, you would think, because most people deal in two dimensions, not three. And so that's a very important phenomenon as well. On to other topics. You know what I did want to talk about? Is how the liberals, the illiberal liberals, are blasting Romney because he's a Mormon. That really got me angry. I'm not a Mormon, let me be very clear. But for Newsweek to make Romney's religion a big issue got me very upset. I don't like it. And I think it's something that's so un-American, it's unbelievable. Now, I would expect this from the Vermin at Newsweek, since it's a failing magazine, since they're basically out of business. But for them to attack Mormonism and Romney for being a Mormon, basically, in a they're doing it in an offhanded way, the way they always do things, is sickening. Why don't they attack Catholics for being in the Congress? Well, because that's not an issue. Why don't they attack how many Jews there are in Congress? Well, that's not an issue. How come they've never done an expose on Muslims in Congress? They wouldn't dare. But Mormons, no problem. It says they've conquered Broadway, talk radio, the U.S. Senate, and they may win the White House. Why Mitt Romney and 6 million Mormons have the secret to success. Walter Kern, go to hell in Newsweek. Your whole magazine should go to hell as far as I'm concerned. You are a despicable outfit to make Mr. Romney's religion the issue. That's all I have to say about you. You're a despicable group of people, and I'm not a Mormon. Why don't you show your nerve and talk about the Muslims in Congress? Or even show bigger nerve and talk about the Jews in Congress. Go ahead, see what happens to you then. Open up your big mouth to Newsweek and say, oh, look at this. They've conquered Wall Street, the media, and Congress.
Savage.
After the Iowa GOP debate last night, can you tell me who's leading the field and is there a true conservative who can beat Obama? Well, to discuss this, I'm joined by Henry Olson, the Vice President, Director of American Enterprise Institute's National Research Initiative. Henry Olson, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael, for having me on tonight.
Well, in your mind, who won the GOP debate last night and who hurt themselves?
I think Pawlenty and Huntsman hurt themselves the most. Pawlenty, because he needs to show that he can be both a principled conservative and somebody who can get results done, and he continues to fall short on persuading people that he's got conservative principles at heart. And Huntsman, because he's so far behind in the polls, he needs to gain a clear identity. And last night, he didn't really explain to people why he's different from the rest of the field and why they should start making him their number one choice. I think Bachman helped herself a lot last night. She showed she could gracefully stand up under fire. And she demonstrated what her selling point is, which is that she's a hardcore conservative who will never flinch and will never give up her principles. And I think Rick Santorum helped himself a little bit last night, that he showed himself to be a little more well-versed and a little bit more seasoned than perhaps many people would have given him credit for. He's still a candidate who is on the outside looking in, but I think some more people will be looking at him than they would have before last night.
Well, can any of these candidates honestly beat the campaigner-in-chief?
Yeah, I think a number of these candidates could beat Obama. Obama's first going to have to make a case for himself, and he's increasingly showing that he's making a hard time making a case for his policies, much less himself. And his ratings are continuing to drop into levels that incumbent presidents tend not to win re-election. A lot of these candidates have a long way to go to figuring out how to both bring the excitement of the true conservative movement on board, while at the same time not scaring or alienating the people who would like to be with us but currently aren't. But I think there are a few people up there who show that they can.
Okay, what about Rick Perry? What will his impact be after he announces tomorrow, and does he become the front runner?
Perry doesn't become the front runner, but he immediately vaults into the top tier of candidates. And his challenge is going to be figuring out how to unite the right behind him while simultaneously not uniting the Republican left and center against him. You know, one of the things that an obstacle to Perry is his Texas background. I mean, and there's two parts to that. One is People in America still have Bush fatigue, both on the center and the right, and he's going to have to show that he's not another Bush in all the different ways that people on both the left, center, and right don't want another Bush. There's also the question of Texas. I mean, Texas in the 80s had a tourism campaign that said Texas, it's like a whole different country. And that's the way a lot of people perceive it, is that it's just very idiosyncratic in its style and its manner. And Perry needs to come across as somebody who can genuinely appeal to the heartland of people who don't quite have the Texas confidence and the Texas can-do attitude. That's something I think he can do, but he needs to show it. He also needs to figure out how to weave the different aspects of his persona into a more coherent narrative. The stumble on gay marriage, where first he invoked the 10th Amendment to say it was okay, and then he had to go back and say, well, you know, it's not really okay with me. I was kind of speaking in a legalistic way. He needs to not get into those inconsistencies or incomplete statements of his true beliefs. He needs to be able to keep the focus on a positive, coherent personality rather than be explaining things that might draw ire from one or the other parts of his potential coalition.
Well, don't you think men like Romney and Huntsman should be running the Democratic ticket given to their liberal leanings?
Both Romney and Huntsman are clearly to the left of the Republican center. In fact, Romney was not a registered Republican for many years until he actually registered in preparation for his Senate run against Ted Kennedy in 1994, although, of course, he comes from a Republican family with his father, Governor George Romney, who was a candidate for president in 1968. Look, both of them have difficulty conveying to the sense they, in their heart, agree with conservative principles, that in their heart they think that government is too big and needs to go back, that in their heart they believe that limited government is not just a slogan but a reality, and that government isn't just inefficient, but that government ought not to be engaged in economic planning at all, or that government ought not to be trading away citizens' liberty in the name of policy goals at all. If they can't do that, then they're clearly showing their way out of the mainstream for the Republican conservative movement.
Why are these candidates leaning so far to the left when America clearly wants to go in the opposite direction? Well, why? Because it's Republicans, why?
Both Romney and Huntsman perceive that they can't win the conservative base. They don't have the track record of grassroots involvement, of the sort of vocal commitment to principled conservatism that other candidates do. I think they also think that the country isn't as far to the right as most people in the conservative movement think it is. Election after election seems to suggest that Americans are willing to go into a direction towards conservatism that they have not embraced wholeheartedly in the last 4 decades. But I think Romney and the Huntsman are betting that the country hasn't changed as much as most of the rest of the country has changed.
Is Rick Perry, who is as true a conservative as we're going to get, our only chance at beating Obama, or are there others that you think could send him back to Chicago?
Rick has a lot to show. He's got enormous potential. He's got the ability to do something that of uniting the GOP establishment and the GOP right and appealing to the center, the sort of thing he's done in Texas in 3 separate elections. But he's got to prove it before we can say that he's definitely got it. But I think he's definitely got a lot of potential to be somebody who could be a very strong and principled nominee. I think Bachman has ability to connect with people that is really, really something to behold. I think she definitely can win the nomination. I think she's definitely got conservative principles and enunciates them clearly and in language that moves people to action. What she's got to do is show that the sort of people who would buy Tim Pawlenty's criticism, she's got to be able to convince those people that like Rick Perry's got results in Texas, that if she were entrusted with the White House, that she could do it. It's a tall order, but I wouldn't rule her out.
So what can we, the people of the Savage Nation, do to make sure that Obama is not reelected?
What we, the people, can do is make sure that we nominate somebody who can clearly enunciate American principles, that we can nominate somebody who understands that natural rights, an individual's right to be free from government intervention, exists outside of government, and it's to protect those rights that government was instituted. It's the simple faith of our founding fathers. It's the reason we have July 4th celebrations every year, and we need to make sure that somebody can say that in a way that is convincing and explain to people why it is that what's going on in Washington right now is an abandonment of that principle and threatens the very sort of limited government and individual liberties that holds America distinct among the nations of the world. And then we also need to be willing to accept imperfection, that whoever the nominee is going to, like any human, be flawed. And we have to acknowledge that a blemish is not a stain, and that a blemished but good candidate is somebody that we can put our hearts and souls into and make sure that we complete our objective and not get distracted.
Okay. Henry Olson, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Thanks a lot for having me, Michael. It was a pleasure to be on the show and talk with you about my favorite topic.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Some of what we're facing today has to do with events beyond our control. As the economy was improving and improving, suddenly it was hit with the unrest in the Middle East that helped send gas prices through the roof. Europe is dealing with all sorts of financial turmoil that is lapping up on our shores. Japan's tragic earthquake hurt economies around the globe. And all of this has further challenged our economy.
Hey, if you think that's bad, how about identity theft? What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now, 1-800-LOCK-485, and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call now.
You know, I'm controlling my emotions for a number of reasons. The number one being, I'm in a state of disbelief that this man, Obama, is committing such traitorous acts one after the other in plain sight. This communist con man, and there is no outcry in America. Am I the only person in the United States of America who understands that the man has put us at the back of the bus? This communist street organizer. And I see him for what he is. I don't think I'm the only one. I can't be the only one. But then again, I ask myself, am I the only one? Because there should be a huge outcry in America, and I see nothing. Instead, I see the usual. I see the same Hollywood sluts cavorting with their underwear upside down on the streets of Sunset Boulevard, so to speak. I see the same stories about the poor, downtrodden, non-taxpaying welfare mother having a fistfight in a New York subway car and the baby rolling out of the subway car and so they can go home and collect their welfare check. I see the same story about the man in a striped suit hitting a ball out of a park, and I see no outrage about what this man has done to this country. I'm amazed. I'm amazed that we have a traitor in the White House, as clear as I'm standing here, overtly handing the baton to Russia, to China, to every nation that wants to destroy us, and not a word from the American vermin in the media. Not one peep from the little boys and girls trained like brainwashed robots in the schools of journalism, which have been teaching them to hate the country, to hate the white man, to hate the supremacy of this nation, and they come out and they say nothing. And it falls upon me. One man, Michael Savage. You know anybody else in talk radio who said a word about it today? Oh, they were talking about Republicans dead and Cantor is good and Reid is bad. I understand that's all true. But the big picture is the big picture. Obama has decimated the space industry for the United States of America. He's decimated 10,000 jobs in NASA. 10,000. Let's just take a point of view from jobs. Here is a liar from the gutters of Chicago
put in by a gang that nobody even knows who the gang is. We only surmise the shadowy gang that controls the world. The shadowy gang that destroyed the economy to put this shyster into the White House. And now the man sits there and decimates the military, decimates the space program, decimates the American family. Let us go down the list together. I wrote the book, Trickle Up Poverty. A few hundred thousand of you bought it in hardcover. Hooray. Hooray. I can fill my gas tank and fill my guts. Hooray, hooray, hooray. You think that's why I wrote the book? Did I need to kill myself to write that book? Did I need to eat my guts out to write that book and put myself at further risk from the risk I'm already in? That the New World Order has recognized me for who I am? And they said, no, he will not talk freely. We'll smear him in England. We'll ban him in England. And God, hopefully that will ban him on the American media. And we'll shut that guy up because he's the only one who knows what we're doing. At least he's the only one willing to say what we're doing. In such a forceful, clear way, we have to stop him. So let's smear him and let's make sure he can't go to the United Kingdom. Is that why I wrote Trickle Up Poverty? So that Obama could get away with this? The man should be impeached for this. If not for, let's say, at least three other crimes and misdemeanors, the man has decimated the space shuttle, given Russia the lead they've been after for 50 years, turned us into passengers on the Russian Soyuz spacecraft. He's put us at the back of the bus. Do you understand what I just said to you? We'll now be riding on the back of the bus to the space station. He's put us at the back of the bus because he hates this country. There's no other explanation. The man hates America. He and his first lady hate America. In their guts, they hate America. And yet they abuse the office of the White House. They trash the White House. They trash the presidency. They abuse the taxpayer with their excessive trips. Their feasts at the White House. They tell you to eat carrot cake, to eat carrots, and they're feasting on fatty foods, disgusting cheeseburgers and French fries, and they tell you to eat carrots. And she gets away with it. He gets away with it. What are you afraid to say? What are the people afraid to say about Obama and why? What power does he have over you? You opened your big mouths in the media. You didn't shut your stinking mouths when Bush was president. You didn't shut your lousy left-wing pinko traps for 1 minute when Bush was in the White House. You didn't shut your yappers for a second. Every minute attacking him. And now not one word about Obama. You people with journalism degrees are the problem. You would have been very happy working for Joseph Stalin because you are no better than those who wrote Pravda or Izvestia. You wrote Pravda in this country for Obama now for 2 years now. Pravda, 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 the truth. The truth, Obama's truth, the Democrat socialist truth. The taxpayers of America are no good. The business people of America are greedy. Shall I go down the list? You know, there was a class of people in the Soviet Union called the kulaks. Who were the kulaks? They were farmers who sold their produce on the open market. They raised wheat, and they raised rye, and they raised oats. They raised apples, and they raised cabbages. And they sold their produce on the open market. And they were known as the kulaks. And they made a small living. Some of them made a good living, but most of them were small farmers. And Joseph Stalin declared them the enemy of the new Soviet Union. He said they are the greedy capitalists. They are why there is hunger in the Soviet Union. And so he nationalized or collectivized the Soviet farms. And he arrested or killed most of the farmers because they were the evil ones in the animal farm of the Soviet Union, the Union of Soviet the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And now we have a president who attacks the middle class in virtually every speech. He calls you greedy. He makes you embarrassed if you make a living and you buy a few things for yourself and your children and have the nerve and audacity to put some away for tomorrow. Because you see, the people he supports, the people he likes, are A, the greediest people that the world has ever seen, the hedge fund operators who are running like pirates with scarabs, running wild with no controls. They should have been reined in from day one. They should have been imprisoned and their assets seized for what they did to this country. But they're still doing it. I wrote about it in Trickle Up Poverty. They have names. They have organizations. The Managed Funds Association is their lobbying group. They're still giving Obama millions and millions of dollars.
So he loves those people. And who else does he love? The non-taxpaying, non-working leech. The non-taxpaying, non-working leech. You know, I walked in San Francisco the other day, and I saw one homeless, filthy bum after another, scratching himself, rolling around in the grass, defecating behind bushes. I had no compassion for them. I have lived with these human parasites for so many years that I have no compassion. Why? Because the city spends hundreds of millions of dollars on these bums, and it goes right up their nose or right down their gullets. Either they drink themselves into the gutter or they snort themselves into the gutter, and you got people begging them to see what they can do for them next. Where did the hundreds of millions of what did the hundreds of millions of dollars get us for the homeless services? Nothing. Again, liberalism is a mental disorder. Here in San Francisco, a parolee is out. The cops are looking for him in San Francisco because he was pimping a 14-year-old girl. The cops try to arrest him. He pulls out a gun and shoots the cops. And the black neighborhood, the Bayview Hunters Point District, goes ballistic. That's what the civil rights movement was for, to support gangbanging and drug dealers. This is the city. This is the country that we have inherited. And at the same time, on a macro level, Barack Hussein Obama, who ought to hang his head in shame. But the problem is he is not ashamed. He's very proud because those who put him in power want him to do these things. They wanted us in the back of the bus. They wanted the Soviets to be the supreme leader in space. They wanted the Chinese currency to take over the world currency.